as a reminder, please, as a reminder, out of respect for our speaker, please do not walk in front of the podium for any reason. Use the outside aisles. And, it gives me great pleasure to introduce a very good, special friend of mine, Bernard G. from Visalia.
How's everybody today? I'm Bernard. I'm an alcoholic. Actually, my real name is Flavio Bernardino Garcia Sandoval. Can't get no more Mexican than that. I'll tell you a little bit about what I used to be like, what happened, and what I'm like now. Well, I was brought up and raised in Albuquerque, New Mexico. That's where I was raised and brought up, and that's where I was from, and that's where I started drinking a lot and getting into a lot of trouble in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I come from a little house, adobe made house back in Albuquerque in the barrio, and my dad was a big drinker. You know, he's the alcoholic of the family, you know, so I got his gene today. That's what they say. I don't know how true it is, but anyway, I started hanging around with the older crowd, you know, the vatos in the neighborhood, you might call that, and I started drinking with them. You know, I had to prove to myself, you know, I started off drinking with... My first drunk was Tokay wine. I don't know if anybody remembers Tokay wine. It's been a while back. 11 cellars, white port, and that's the way it was. You know, the first time I ever got drunk, you know, I threw up. It was trouble from the beginning. You know, I should have known better. But what an alcoholic like me doesn't know is better. You know, I just wanted more to get drunk. It helped me to escape. I was around 15, 16 years old when I started getting in trouble, and it's all due to alcohol. You know, I lost my driver's license, drunk driving, resisting arrest. Every time they pulled me over, it was drunk driving, resisting arrest. By the time I was 18, I didn't have no driver's license, and I got them at 16. 15, 16, you can get your driver's license over there in New Mexico. But it didn't happen that way for me. You know, it was trouble from the beginning. My aunt was an alcoholic. That was my father's sister. And then I come from a long line of those drunks in my family. So, you know, I can see that today, but I couldn't see it back then. So I started drinking and getting in trouble, and then there for a while, you know, I didn't drink for a while. You know, I got this girlfriend, and I stopped drinking, you know. I got in trouble. I got stabbed one night. You know, I was about 16. Had a 50-50 chance of living or dying. So I met this nurse in the hospital. I was 15, 16, and she was 27. Good number. You know, so I figured, go for them older women, you know. I told my mom, it runs in the family, Mom. My dad was 10 years younger than my mother. You know, they used to call her the cougar, you know what I mean? So, yeah, whatever works, you know, but that's where I come from, that kind of insanity. You know, I know what that is today. You know, when I first got here, I had a hard time with it. But anyway, I started drinking, and I cooled it down for a little bit, you know, and then I figured, you know, I moved in with her, you know, hell, I was out of the house by the time I was 15 years old and drinking. So she said, why don't we go to San Diego? That was the first time I ever been to California. I was about close to 19, 17. So I ended up over there in San Diego back in the 60s, you know, the hippie era, you know, I come from that, you know. You know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll was real big. LSD with Bertie starting off. I used to go around the colleges, you know, beating up on all the hippies so I could steal their LSD and sell it for alcohol, you know. Basically, that's what I did. You know. I wasn't too nice when I was growing up, at 15 or 17 years old. But anyway, I ended up right here in California, San Diego, you know, and back then, Broadway there was nothing but Navy everywhere, man. Navy looked like Tijuana, hustling you for this, hustling you for that, man. I said, man, I like this. You know, I'm in the right place. But then I ended up going to Tijuana. And I used to take all these Southern boys down there to Tijuana because they didn't know what tequila was or a Mexican or anything else. So I said, shit, I'll take you down there. You know, hell. And those are the guys that introduced me to Southern Comfort. Man, you got to drink this stuff, Southern Comfort. I said... Well, I said, well, you got to come down to Tijuana and drink some of that tequila with me down there. So we all agreed. I was with Southern Comfort. They were with tequila. And they had a few nightclubs. One of them was the Chicago Club and the Blue Note and Mike's a Go-Go down there. And man, did we party down there. Man, I used to take them every weekend down there. The guys knew guys, never met them, but we got along good, you know. So after a while, you know, that ended. Me and my girlfriend broke up. So I said, shit, time to go back, you know, to Albuquerque. You know, I always ran home, man. I loved my mother. I was a mama's boy. She got me out of jail. Long as I didn't steal, I'll get you out of jail, man. That was my jail card, you know, staying out of jail. So, but before then, the draft was after me. So they caught up with me there in San Diego. My mother said, man, you better go to the draft board and check it out. They're checking you up. If not, they're going to lock you up. So I went to the draft board, you know, loaded up. Man, I tell you. First time I ever been to L.A., right? A bus full of booze and a bus full of marijuana smoke. And, man, that's the way I took my test there in Los Angeles, man. I couldn't even see straight coming out of that bus. I was already drunk when I got there. No wonder I failed. And I can see why, you know, because who wants to go to the service when you're out here partying, having so much fun? You know, all this free love everywhere you go. Nowadays, you can't even find it. You know, shit. Talk about love. There ain't no love. Huh? You saw it right here a little while ago, right? Man, it cap on you real quick. But anyway, so I said, man, I got to go home. So I went back home. Then I started drinking and getting in trouble, back with my homeboys again, back to the barrio, back to this, you know, place I didn't even want to be in, you know, but I was there. And then, you know, this bright idea came over me and said, well, if I get married, maybe I'll cool my drinking down. Don't ever do that, because that shit don't work either, let me tell you. So I was 19 years old at the time, you know, and my mother had to sign for me to get married. That's how bad it was, you know, so I did it. And I, you know, married this gal. She's a nice gal. Anyway, first year, man, I was back in jail again. All beat up. They beat the hell out of me because when I was in the booking desk, I hit this police officer and I knocked him out. So that's the worst thing you can do because they come at you, about 10 of them in a drunk tank, and really beat you up pretty good. So I was beat up pretty good. And then her parents moved to Fresno, California. And then she was 6 months pregnant at the time. I tell you, man, have a kid, a drunk, and 20 years old, that ain't too good. That ain't very good responsibility for our, you know, a guy like me. But anyway, we started thinking about it, and about a day before I had to go to court, because I knew I was going to do some road camp time, and Fresno, California sounded good. I said, well, it's either the county jail or the farm or Fresno, California. So I said, let's go to Fresno, California. Let's go live off your parents, basically. You know how we are. Man, we'll live off of anybody that's willing to give it to you. So I said, you know, you know, that's part of the alcoholism, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, so here I am, you know, loaded up my 59 Chevrolet Impala and loaded up her, and we come over here to Fresno, California. Man, I said, what the hell am I going to do? And I, you know, I'm hooked with Albuquerque. You know, I have my security there, my mother, my parents. You know, man, I had a compulsion. I wanted to go back, but I knew if I went back, shit, they were going to give me some time. And you know how it is, man. You know, hey, you can't live too far away from your familia and all this, and all these things going through my head. But anyway, there I was in Fresno, California, the land of the nuts and fruits, you know. And I said, man, what am I doing? You know? 21 years old right there, just had a kid there in Fresno, California. Just no job, let me tell you, man. It was hard to get a job back in the, you know, late 60s because I got there in 69 there to Fresno, California, and jobs were kind of scarce, you know. And who wants to work if you're drinking anyway? But anyway, finally, you know, I wore out my welcome there with her sister and everybody else. So I finally got out of there. Went and got assistance. You know how it is, man. When you got a kid, you can get good welfare, good food stamps, good everything. And at that time, that sounded pretty good for me. But anyway, I kept drinking. And one night I wrecked my car, hit and run. And I said, man, I'm starting this stuff all over again. So 3 years went by, 1971. I finally got a job. It took me 3 years to get a job. And, you know, I was a sausage maker, and my dad was a slaughterhouse butcher, you know, so I knew a little bit about slaughtering and making sausage and, you know, the meat industry of it. So I said, and I was walking, you know, because I didn't have a car anymore because I wrecked it, and it was hitting in the garage because the cops were looking for me, and because I got drunk and I wrecked it, booze again. But anyway, I see this place, it says UFW Union Hall. I said, yeah, well, I think I'll go in here and see if they need a job in 1971. I said, hey, you guys need a meat stuffer or anybody at a slaughterhouse? And this union guy said, are you sure you can do all that you're talking about? I said, yeah, I can do it. He said, well, there's a guy retiring in Madera, California, which is about 20 miles north of Fresno. So I said, you know what, man, I'm going to go there and check it out. So there it was, and I got hired there. Man, I tell you, it's good to find a job, and I got an apartment, and things were looking up, but I still was drinking. And I knew that if I didn't do something about my drinking, something bad was going to happen to me. So one day I was looking there at TV, and they said Alcoholics Anonymous commercial came on. And, you know, I said, I ain't no damn alcoholic. I'm 22 years old. Shit. But anyway, I tried it because, you know, the old lady, you know, if you get in trouble, you'll do anything to stay out of trouble. So I said, yeah, I'll go check it out. So, you know, back in them days, central office had a 12-step line. So they call you, and you take a friend with you, and you go to their house, and you 12-step them, you know. So this old guy comes to my house, you know, I still remember his name, David Crockett. I said, white guy, bald-headed, you know, old. So he said, you know, I invited him inside the house. And he thought my wife was sicker than me, or he thought she was the alcoholic. But you know how how sick Al-Anons can get. You know? But anyway, he talks to me, lays all this talk and his story, you know, boring story and everything. Hell, I don't want to hear all that stuff. I ain't gonna sober up anyway. Shit. And you know, and he said, "Well, we got a club." I said, a club? Man, that sounds pretty damn good, man, you know, because I'm used to the nightclubs. You know, but in the 70s, you know, after the free love hippie ended, the disco stuff started coming in. We had the back door in Clovis. We had go-go places all over the place. And, man, I was used to going to them bars playing pool and stuff. I said, a club? That sounds pretty good. Yeah, they got a little restaurant in there, they got coffee, they got all kinds of stuff. I said, well, you know, man, I'm going to go check it out. That sounds good. So I went to my first meeting there. And I walked into the Alano Club in Fresno. And I thought about it in my truck. I said, I don't know if I want to go in this damn place. But anyway, I walked in there, like a club like this. I'm 22 years old. There wasn't nothing in there but old people. I said, man, this is what they tell me. If you're a real wino, you got a skid row wino, you get off them boxcars, and this is where you end up at. I had a job, I had a wife and a kid, and I'm too young to be here. And that's the way I looked at it, man. You know, shit, you know. I didn't know the disease, you know, was this bad until I learned about it here in Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, I went in there, and the youngest guy was 38 years old. I said, well, it's better than nothing, you know, 38. I'm 22, man. He's still old as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, I started talking to him. This guy's name was Bob. And then the other young guy was 37 or 38, too, was Ed. But Bob took me to this meeting in before, you know, I went to a lot of meetings, and it was hard for me to admit I was an alcoholic at 22, because I figured, you know, an alcoholic is a guy that lost everything. You're broke, you're one of these skid row winos, you're on skid row, and all this other stuff. And this Bob, he takes me to this meeting, you know, and it was hard, man. I was going around saying, well, they said to get honest. Well, I'll get honest. I'm a halfway alcoholic. Besides that, I didn't come over here to stop drinking. I just came over here to cool my troubles down. That's what I have. That, the booze ain't got nothing to do with it. It's my trouble. So anyway, I was there at the meeting, and I talked a little bit, and then this guy stands up, and he jumps up, and he said, "Hey, man, this disease is like, it's like either you're pregnant or you're not, and if you don't like it, there's a goddamn door." And I said to myself, I said, "Well, maybe I got to kick some ass to join this AA." So he said, there's the goddamn door. Well, I'm going to follow him out the door, and we're going to get it on, Holmes, you know, and let's do it, you know. I'm ready. I'll do it to the death. And this guy, Bob, holds me back. He said, "Bernard, don't listen to that guy. You don't know what he's talking about." Well, he said, if you didn't like it, there's the damn door. Well, hell, I'm ready to take him on. You know, this is my insane thinking that I had when I got here. You know, street talk, street everything. Come over here and listening to these damn old people, man. And then they tell me to get honest, and then they want to beat me up, you know. That's the way it was. And I got honest. And then they told me, "Get honest." This other meeting I went to, yeah, I told them, "You know what? There ain't nothing here but a bunch of goddamn old people, and I don't want a goddamn thing to do with you people." And I walked out, you know, and this old lady, Opal, I still remember her name, redheaded, old, ugly, you know. And I was by the pool tables, because we had pool tables there. And I was playing pool with this guy, and she comes up to me, "Listen here, you goddamn kid. This is the way we are here. You don't come over here, you don't talk like that." I said, "Man, I'm going to knock the shit out of this old lady and just put her down." And then, like a split second, I said, "Yeah, but what are these people going to think? You're beating up on that old lady, you know." And that's the way it was. I just didn't have no way of thinking. I thought violence was the solution to everything. I know I can beat him up. Especially when it came down to reading, you know, because I had a hard time. When I got here, I couldn't read the steps, couldn't understand it, couldn't write too good, couldn't spell too good. I was dyslexic and didn't even know about it. It just kind of passed me along in high school. And then my favorite words around here at every meeting was "mother F everything." Mother F this, mother F that. It was a bunch of, you know. There was this little old lady, school teacher, said, "You know what, Bernard? I'm keeping track of all the bad words you say, and I'm going to charge you 25 cents. Yeah, I said, "Yeah, you better wait a long time if you're going to collect anything off of me, you know." And then this old timer, you know, after 6 months or a year being there, he finally got tired of me mother effing everybody. And there was a table like this after the meeting, and he slams a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous on the table. And he says, "Come here, you goddamn kid." This old man, 68, John Rice was his name. He said, "You find those words in that big damn book right here. You tell me where those words are." And they weren't in there. And then after that, you know, it was hard for me to get a sponsor. I had one sponsor. This little short Mexican guy, right? Well, I'm going to go with this Mexican guy, man. You know, maybe I can give him some little bit of my bullshit, you know. So this little short Mexican guy, he talked to me for a while. For about 6 months, I ran around with him because he said he had like 5 years sober at the time. And there was guys in there that had 18 years sober, 10 years, you know, 20 years. I said, "These guys are bullshitting me, man. There ain't no way in hell anybody can go without a drink for that long. I don't care who it is." So I started following this little short Mexican around, you know, keeping an eye on him because I'm going to bust him when he starts drinking. And the rest of them too, not just him. And then after a little while of that, man, these guys were staying sober, you know, and I started thinking, well, you know, they told me to get honest with myself, and I started looking back at my past, and I said, "You know what? Might be something to this drinking, because every time I drank, I ended up in trouble. Every time I drank, I wrecked my car. Every time I drank, I got in a fight. Every time I drank, I went to jail. And then every time I drank, sometimes I couldn't remember. You know, I could have ran over anybody and not remember what I was doing because I was a blackout drinker at 22 years old. Man, I said, it's just too much for me, you know what I mean? And then here you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's a whole new world. you know, I was really kind of raised here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then I was at a meeting one time, and I was new in the program. And I said, and to this day, I feel sorry for this. You know, I had about 6 months sober. And this guy jumps up, and he said, and I told him, you know, I'm Bernard, I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholic? You ain't no goddamn alcoholic. Hell, I spilled more booze on my tie than what you ever drank. Man, all those old timers got that guy out of the meeting real quick. I said, well, I wonder what they're going to do to him, man. But anyway, you know, I really had a lot of good friends here in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and and then I got this white guy as a sponsor. You know, he started taking me to hospital and institutions. And I was very sick. My sponsor told me, you need two sponsors. You're too damn sick. And I said, well, I don't think I'm sick. You people are sick. What are you talking about? You're the sick one around here. I don't even know why you're hanging around here. I was very argumentative, you know. But anyway, I got this sponsor, he said, and he was looking at the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I walk in the club, and I said, and he shows me the book of AA. And he said, here, have this book, and I want you to read the dark print, not the white print. I said, you know what, Jack? I said, you know what, to tell you the truth, Jack, you know, they tell me to get honest here. I couldn't even read the dark print. You know, I have a hard time reading English. He said, and, you know, I hope I can stay sober, you know, because, you know, I used to go to this other meeting where all the silk sheeters go. You know, you got different kinds of meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous. They don't tell you all these things. But anyway, it was called Palm and Shaw meeting. Man, that's where all the elite went. All the educated ones, they have, you know, degrees in everything. And then I heard one guy said that he had a degree. He had a PhD. He was a poor, hopeless drunk. And I said, that sounds pretty good. I'm going to share that with him at the Silk Cedars meeting. So I went in there one day and I told him I was a poor, hopeless drunk. And, you know, they understood that. You know, there's all walks of life here in AA. That's the beauty of it. You know, there's no prejudice. There's no, well, I'm this or I'm that. And no hate. You know, it all goes away in time. And I hated everybody. I hated everybody and everything. You know, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous like a hater, you know, and I couldn't deal with it. Hated cops, most of all cops. I hated them. They were always picking on me. But as I got honest in this program, hell, it was me. I was picking on them. And it's hard to eat the truth, you know. It's hard to look at myself. And this old guy used to tell me, Bernard, one of these days you come to these AA meetings, you're going to find yourself, you know. And it does happen here in Alcoholics Anonymous. The promise is they're here. You just got to keep coming back. So I was 22 years old, man, having a hard time with this AA lingo, you know, and it's hard. You know, you find some of those soft AA members, and then you find the real hard ones that slam the book at you, you know, and then you find those smart ones with a PhD that'll tell you, you know, if you don't write an inventory, you're going to get drunk. I said, holy shit, man. I had about a year and a half, man. I said, shit, I haven't wrote nothing. I can't even spell. You want me to write? So, you know, hey, AA works in mysterious ways. So I went to this speaker meeting, this Black Mac, and he was black, too. He came from Los Angeles. And I said, all right, I want to hear him talk. And I heard him in his speech and everything. And he said he got to the fourth step. He couldn't read and write either. He said, when I came to that fourth step, he said, I killed two birds with one stone. You know, I talked it out. So that worked my fourth and fifth step. So when he got out of the meeting, they say, go up there and ask him honestly. And I told him, I said, I'm having a hell of a hard time with this fourth and fifth step because, you know, I can't write, I can't spell, you know, I'm having a hard time with it. And they say I'm going to get drunk. He said, hell no, keep it simple. You don't have to be a genius to work this program. It's not how smart you are. Just don't take the first drink and you ain't going to get drunk. And you will work them in your own slow way. It will come to you. And that's the way it happened to me. And then this other guy told me, Bernard, if it bothers you so much you can't read, you got to go to night school. And I started going to night school, and there were some of those AA members there too. They're in night school. I said, what are you guys doing here? Well, same thing you are, man. We're trying to understand this English language a little bit better. And I said, well, that's for me, man. So I went to school for about 8 years, and I kind of put something together. But anyway, I'm trudging this road, they say, of happy destiny. You know, the AA lingo, happy destiny, trudging. And there's a lot of things that happen in sobriety. You know, are you going to make it through? That's the name of the game. No matter how hard it gets, just don't drink. I take inventories of myself, you know, and I had a hard time with that God. Because me and God, you know, he made me an alcoholic. It's all his fault. God's fault, man. I don't care what they say. Because I used to blame people, places, and things for all my mistakes, and God's one of them, you know. And I don't like God anyway. He said, well, you don't have to like him, you know. Just put another G in front of it. I put another O in there and make it good. Just believe in good. Believe in the meaning. Believe in a power greater than yourself. And I said, well, that's pretty good. You know, I'll believe in that, you know. This guy told me, you know, well, believe in a train if you have to. You know, stand in the middle of a railroad track, and what's the first thing that's going to kill you, man? It ain't going to be the caboose, is it? It's going to be the engine. You know, so believe in something better and stronger than yourself. So I had a hard time with that God stuff, you know. And I don't want to sound that I'm far from being religious or anything else, you know, because I'm not, man. I'm just like the average guy. 44 years around here, and I still make mistakes. Trust me. I'm not perfect. You know, I'm just another human being just like any other person. And how I got 44 years is one day at a time. I try to work a simple program and apply it to my life. You know, people pray different ways. And I heard this one guy said, you know, this is a way I pray to God that kind of made sense to me. He said, I pray to him every morning. And this is what I tell my God. God, don't get us into anything you can't get us both out of every day. And that's what I do. That's my prayer for the day. God, help me through this day so I won't hit anybody, hurt anybody, or hurt myself. You know, but I learned how to put these things here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I listened, and I listened to learn. You know, it was very hard, the steps. Restore me to sanity. Give me a break. These old people are nuts, not me. You know, I was perfect when I got here. Yeah, I was a perfect drunk, in and out of trouble since I was 15, 16 years old, and blaming you for it. I was totally insane when I got here. I had real bad, sick thinking when I got here. But today, it's not that way. Today, you know, I found a way to stop drinking, you know, through a power greater than myself, which today I choose to call God, as I understand it. Not as anybody else understanding in the room, but the way I understand him. I got a good God. This old timer, he showed me, you know what my God is? He's one of these happy-go-lucky guys that has a sense of humor. You know, I didn't sober up to be a long-faced, miserable guy here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there are some of those guys that are long-faced and miserable here. And, you know, that ain't what I want. You know, you got to go for somebody that you like what they have. And I went to the guys that I liked what they had. My first sponsor, he taught me how to do hospital and institution work. You know, going to jails and prisons and getting clearance. And I used to go a lot to this prison up there. It's a minimum security camp called Miramani. And they're, you know, firefighters, they fight these fires out there. So I used to go there every Saturday to their meeting. Every Saturday, man, I was there. You know, and I used to go over there and practice how to read the pre-emblem because, you know, I'm one of these alcoholics that are very sensitive and I don't suffer well, you know. I don't like them for them to laugh at me if I make a mistake when it comes to reading. You know, I would get very offensive and who knows, I might beat you up for it. I used to say to myself, you might be a better reader than I do, and you might be better educated than me, but I know I can kick your ass, and that was my attitude. Everything was kicking ass. You know what I mean? How crazy is that? You know, today I got to laugh at my own self, you know, because I was really sick when I got here. insanity, and all these words I couldn't make sense of. But I had to put it together, man, because I wanted, and then I started wanting to stay sober. And that's when the beauty comes in, is when you want to stay sober. Things began to get better for me. I started getting more and more into, you know, hospital and institution work and reading the preamble there, practicing my reading, the steps, practicing reading the book. Man, I was getting practice. I was really wanting to stay sober and willing to go to any lengths and stay sober. No matter what happens, Bernard, just don't drink. And I got a chance in life, and I got a chance to make this program. Because to me, you know, I found a lot of good people here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they used to say, if you like what somebody has, steal it. Oh, man, that sounds pretty good. Use it. Apply it to my life, right? You know, making amends, you know. I know how to say it. If I'm in the wrong today, I know what to say. You know what, man? I think I was a little bit on the line here, and I apologize. It's okay to apologize today. There was a time that I was so mean, I couldn't do it to nobody. I used to have this friend of mine. We used to go to meetings together, and I met him through my first sponsor. He told me, Bernard, I had 7.5 years. He said, Bernard, this guy Jim Gregg, man, he's a hard nut to crack. I need some help, man. You got to help me sponsor this guy. I said, what can I do? So we all started beginning to be friends, and Jim Gregg was one of the best friends I ever had in Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. He was a real crazy white guy, man. I'll tell you, man. This guy was nutty. He had that dry sense of humor. Shit, I thought I was nuts. He was nutter than me. But anyway, we began to be good friends, and we hung around together a long time. And we used to go to meetings. And then he was fighting for his pilot license. He was one of these World War II veterans that he lost his license of drinking, pilot license. And hell, I never been on a plane. Shit, I'm a desert rat from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I ain't getting on no plane for nobody. You know what I mean? Especially you, Jim. Hell no, I ain't flying with you. So he had to go through all the same procedures and flying and hours and all this. And one time he said, let's go. He must have found me on a weak moment, because he kept bugging me for about 8-9 months. I said, okay, Jim, I'll get on that damn plane. So the first thing I say, God help me that he brings this damn thing down and don't crash it or anything. And that was my first experience with flying. And I said, man, this ain't too bad. And then we went to Redding, flew over there for conferences, Orange County, you know. We flew over here to all the casinos before the Indians casinos came on. It was Hawthorne, Las Vegas. I said, man, this guy's all right, man. We're flying everywhere, you know. Like if I wasn't married or nothing, man, he was my buddy, man. We were tight. So he ended up there, and one day we were coming from Orange County, AA meeting down there, and he started bullshitting with that plane. Right through Tehachapi Mountains, you know what I mean? He went this way and went, scared me so bad, my heart was racing. I said, you know what, I'm going to knock this, you know, I want to knock him out right now. And this light came on real quick and said, Bernard, if you knock him out, who in the hell's going to fly this damn thing? Good thing God intervened, man, because if not, man, we'd have probably both been dead down there in Tehachapi Mountains. So I said, you know what, Jim? I don't want to talk to you no more. I don't, you know, it's like a bad marriage, you know what I mean? I don't want to talk to you no more. I don't care. Don't even call me. I told my wife, if Jim calls, tell him I'm not even here, nothing. I don't want nothing to do with this guy. So about 2-3 months go by. We didn't talk to him at all. Finally, we buried the hatchet. You know, in this program, you know, you learn how to, you know, take it, and you learn how to forgive others and yourself as you go along the line. But it was pretty hard for me to do, you know. And I don't get very touchy or very sensitive with too many things. But when he passed away, you know, I just couldn't help it. I cried for a friend of mine. Real sensitive, you know. You know, I got feelings today. You know, things do hurt me today, but I know how to deal with them through this program. You know, I know how to deal with them one day at a time, and I don't have to run to alcohol. Yeah, sure, Bernard, do you think your friend wanted you drunk? No, he wanted me to stay sober. All the friends that I found here in Alcoholics Anonymous, the best thing that they did for me He said, show me the way how to stay sober and how to live a good life, you know, how to learn how to read, you know, to hold on to a job more than 5 years. Because alcoholics can't hold on to nothing, man. They want to ruin everything. And that's the way I was. You know, I couldn't hold on to a job, couldn't hold on to anything, couldn't be honest with myself. And it all starts with me. By being honest with me, I can be honest with you. I don't have to lie and cheat anymore, you know, because I found this program. I practice this program in all my affairs, not half my affairs. I got to be as good, as nice as I'm up here today as I am at home. I'm at my job. I got to use a lot of patience and tolerance. And here's where I learned patience and tolerance and love and understanding. And I found the love and understanding here in Alcoholics Anonymous with you people, by loving you people. I couldn't love nobody. You know, I thought sex was love, man. You know, I go back to the hippie days. Free love, man. That's what I was. I thought everything was in that, but it's not. It's how I deal with people today. There's all kinds of love, and I realize that today. I put it together here in Alcoholics Anonymous by using the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're there for a reason. You just got to find a way to put them to your reasoning, not to mine. And this is here for anybody. All you young people, you got your whole life ahead of you. If you're an alcoholic at 22, if you're an alcoholic at 23, 15, 16, you got the disease of alcoholism. I never understood the disease of alcoholism. I didn't realize I was sick until I walked into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they showed me. And this is a proven fact, that it is a disease. And I believe that it's in the genes. You know, my dad had it. My brother died from it. He just died here in a while back. He was, you know, it's, I'll tell you a little story about this. You know, my mom passed away at 92. Then a few years later, my dad died at 85. My sister calls me up and tells me that my dad died, and he died on my birthday, March the 28th. Here, 3 years ago, my sister calls me back and she tells me, we're not going to celebrate your birthday anymore, brother, because your other brother died on the 28th, on my birthday, from alcohol and drugs. I said, man, I tell you, I don't want to celebrate it myself. Shit, I might die tomorrow. It's just like the old saying, you know, I'm not scared of dying, but I ain't ready yet. And that's how simple it is. Yeah, I'm not ready to die yet. You know, I haven't made all my amends. I can use a lot of excuses, like I haven't made my amends, or I can go down the line justifying everything like I used to do in my younger days. And that's how you get 44 years, you know. One day at a time. I thought I would never be talking about myself this way 44 years later down the road. But everything that I said today, everything that I tried today, you know, I learned it from other people. They gave it to me. You know, it is a spiritual program. And I don't care how old you are or how young you are. And it's not how much you drink or how long you drink. It's what it does to you. And you can have a good life. It's guaranteed right here. If you're an alcoholic just like me and you suffer from this disease just like me, you can make it. I made it how to learn how to read. My job lasted, that old job I went to look for in 1971. I put in 36 years of work time. I have a pension from the union, you know, and it's thank God for this program that I do. I got my Social Security at 62, and I lived to be that long to even draw it. My brother didn't. He died at 63. He was a year younger than me. A lot of us don't make it in this program, but it is a serious program. It's a matter of life and death. Trust me, it is. It's a matter of life and death. And you have the key. You can either stay here, or you can go back out there and get drunk. You know, take a little inventory of yourself and think about it. Everything bad that ever happened to you, you were probably drunk, just like me. And I didn't know what to do about it until I walked into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous with an open mind. My mind wasn't open, but these people opened it up. There has to be something greater than myself here in Alcoholics Anonymous, which today I can honestly say that it's God, as I understand him, in my life. It's a spiritual program. It's a beautiful spiritual program. I don't fear anybody or anything. I can walk tall everywhere I go. I can walk with confidence within myself because I know myself. I know what I'm capable of doing and not doing. And if I do something wrong, I don't feel good about it. I have to correct it immediately because it bothers me. You know, today I have a conscience. Today I try to clean up my act. I don't use those mother F this and mother F that, especially in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Something that I love dearly. I love this program. I love it just as much as I used to love booze. And I loved alcohol. I like what it did to me. It made me into another person. If I wanted to act educated, man, just take a few drinks and, you know, man, I was there. But the only thing is it turned against me. I just can't use it anymore. Alcohol to me, and I don't even think about drinking anymore. I just think about living, and it's a living program here. I put everything behind. So this is what happens in sobriety. Not always things are going to be good in life. Not all things are going to be perfect. I had a daughter. I've been divorced now for 26 years. I haven't seen my daughter for 26 of those years. My son, I haven't seen him for 10 years. He called me up and told me, "I don't like the way you're treating my mother." I said, "What are you talking about?" Because I took her back to court, man. I was paying spousal support for over 10 years. I said, "You know what, man, I'm getting tired of it. He's already 24 years old. He's out of college. You know, it's time for me to do something here, you know." So he calls me up and says, "I don't like what you've been doing to your mother." I said, "You know what, son? This is between me and your mother, nobody else. And another reason, son, why should I pay more for her than I did for you? It doesn't make sense. You're my son." You know what I mean? But I guess it didn't make quite sense to him because he hasn't talked to me for 10 years, you know. So what am I going to do? Feel sorry for my son? You know, poor little Bernard. You know, my kids don't talk to me no more. You know, what am I going to do here in Alcoholics Anonymous? Huh? That's not the way they taught me how to deal with it. Okay. You know what, Bernard? This old timer told me a long time ago, keep the door open. Your kids will come sooner or later. It might be 20 years down the road. It might be 30 years. It might be never. But the name of the game is you stay sober. You keep a positive attitude in life. And things will be good for you. And life goes on. Pick up the pieces like I did when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Dust myself up and keep on going. Because life is not perfect. And life isn't fair for a lot of us. Things will happen if you're sober. And things will happen when you're drunk. But it's still a lot worse when you're drunk than what it is sober. If you're sober, you can deal with some things. If you're sober, you can put another life back together again. Get married again, whatever it takes. As long as you stay sober, you're doing the right thing. Because God, as I understand, He doesn't want me drunk. He doesn't want me hurting other people in this life. It's simple as that. You know, besides that, I can't take it anymore. I can't fight anymore like I used to when I was 22 years old. I'm 67 now. Give me a break, brother. Think about it. So I think about all these things. I take an inventory of myself before I do things. One of these mental inventories of me. Is that the right thing to do, Bernard? Today I can think about it. I don't have to react to it. Before it was hit first, ask questions later, and then go to jail. I don't have to do that anymore. You know, and talking about jail, you can go to jail in sobriety. One time I had 3 years sober, and I was at the Alano Club, and I was going to beat the hell out of this sober member of AA. I got him by the neck, and I said, "Bernard, I remember what that old timer told me." He said, "Bernard, you beat him up and hurt him, you're going to go to prison." And I said, "Yeah, he's right, man." So not sometimes you got to turn the other cheek and walk away from it. And that's what I do with a lot of anger is the biggest defect of character I got. And I'm still working on it, is anger. My anger is like the light, it's like the wind that blows the light out of my mind. I don't think when I'm mad. So if I'm mad and I see it, feel it coming on, I got to take a breather, man. I got to walk outside, think this thing over, because, you know, I can't afford this anger. You know, it's just like a drink. You know, I don't want to kill nobody over it. I don't want to hurt myself over it. I don't want to hurt anybody else over it. Because then I'm going to feel guilty about it, and I don't want to be guilty about it. I don't want to make amends. I'm sick and tired of making amends. Every 5 minutes, I used to say, oh, I'm sorry for this. I'm sorry I cussed. And, you know, goddamn, I got goddamn being sorry for myself. You know, so the best thing to do is walk away from it. Think about it. And this is the way it's been for 44 years, you know, years in this program. It's not going to be all a happy destiny. Trust me. There's going to be some curves on the road. But the curve on the road, I can deal with it today. I can deal with my insanity today. I don't have to hurt people today. I can be nice to people and not expect anything in return. When I do something for my friends, I do it because I want to do it. I do it out of the heart, not just to say, well, I did this or I did that. I'm not here in Alcoholics Anonymous to make any points or anything. I wasn't that way at my job. I wasn't going to stab anybody to get to be a boss or anything else because I won't feel good about it. The main thing here is I want to feel good. I want to enjoy life. And that's what I'm doing today. And I thank God and I thank you people for allowing me to share tonight. I want to thank you all for keeping this meeting here. Thank you for inviting me here. Thanks for the pillars of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is like Christine that chairs, the people that met me here. These are the pillars of AA. You are the pillars of Alcoholics Anonymous because you're carrying this message. You're keeping the door open for the other person that is still suffering out there in the streets. And this is why I'm here today, because somebody cared for me. And I got to give back what I find here in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's another reason why I'm here. I got to give it away to you so I can keep it for myself. And it's a beautiful program. I love AA, and I love all you people. Today I can say that from the bottom of my heart, because when I got here, I didn't love anybody. I couldn't be nice to nobody. I was a vicious, mean animal at that time. I was a boozer and a loser, and Alcoholics Anonymous made me a person today. I am a person. I'm a good person. I might not be good for everybody, but I'm a hell of a lot better to Bernard than what I was when I first got here. So remember, you young people, you got a big shot in life. Don't go back out there. I'll guarantee you. You know, I have scouts in AA. They go back out there and try drinking again, in and out of these doors, you know. And this old timer told me, hey, I haven't seen one of them come back. Tell me how good it is out there. It's always worse, if you notice, if you listen to them. It gets worse out there. And I don't want it to get any worse for me. I'm hanging in here. I'm hanging with the winners of Alcoholics Anonymous. And all you people that showed up, all you people that keep this place open, you are the winners. It's not me with my 44 years. It's you people. You're the ones that are carrying the message to me and to others. And we're sharing it right here, like brothers and sisters. You know, it's good to have brothers and sisters. You are my family. Even if I lose my real family, it's okay. I got you people I can fall back on. I've been doing it for 44 years. And why should I stop something that works for me? I got to be crazy. And I'm not crazy anymore. I'm not insane. I want to keep coming back. And you people are going to have to put up with me. Because I ain't going nowhere. I'm telling you. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to keep coming back. Besides that, I got to keep Bob straight. Because he can fly off the handle. And there's a few of them over there in Fresno I got to keep straight. They're a little bit, you know, when you sponsor people, you got to find out where they're at. Because this guy, we're all different. All of us. It's just like our fingerprints. What might work for this guy ain't going to work for that guy. What might work for her ain't going to work for him. But the name of the game, no matter what works, just don't drink, keep coming back, listen to what these people have to say. Even if they're old timers, you know. I got this old saying, I found a new disease here in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's diarrhea of the mouth, I can't shut up. Have you ever noticed these old timers that don't know when to shut up? That's a bad one. So I'm not going to be bad today. I'm going to stop it right now. And thank you guys for letting me share. I love you all. Thank you.